With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
Folks, that is right. The New Year's Eve party is still happening because it's time for another episode of Talk Heathen. Today is Sunday, January 8th, 2023, and I am your host, Secular Rarity, and joining me is none other than the man who has been taking the ACA by storm. It is Blatant Blatheist. What is up?
Howdy, folks. How y'all doing? It's good to be here. It's a dream come true, bro.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on, man. The first time here on Talk Heathen. You've been on Truth Wanted. You've been on nonprofits a bunch. You were on like not too long ago either on nonprofits, like just a couple weeks ago, I man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I am glad to have you here today. I honestly think they are taking a huge risk by starting off the year with us. But you know, they want to set the tone high is what they're going for. So they picked two of the greatest hosts here. You know, two of the most, you know, friendly and just, you know, good looking people that they could possibly pick. But before I just get us completely thrown off and never ask back on again, let me remind everybody that Talk Heathen is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. And, you know, it's been a couple of weeks, so you may have forgotten, folks. But this is a live call-in show, and we have open lines. We have people right now behind the scenes that are screening your calls and getting you ready so you can come talk to me and Blatant. All you got to do is give us a call at 512-991-9242, or you can hit us up from your computer at tiny.cc/callth. And before we go grab some of those calls, let me just remind you all about some of the awesome and simple ways you can help us out here at the ACA and Talk Heathen. All you got to do is go to tiny.cc/patreonth, and you can support us on Patreon for, I think, as little as just $1 or $2 a month. So not that much. And you get all kinds of really cool stuff. They're always posting stuff on the Patreon. And then you can just do something even easier, which is just go ahead and like that video. Just do it. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait and I'm going to look at you and I'm going to be just really disappointed if you don't do it. So, all right. Okay. We can move on. But after you do that, go ahead and subscribe to the channel, enable the notifications, and comment below on your favorite caller or your least favorite caller or the great things that Blatant is going to say or the not so great things that I'm going to say. You know, we know how it goes here. But if you want, you can also become a channel member. All you got to do is click the join button below the video and you will get custom chat emotes and you will help perpetuate the mission of Talk Heathen and the Atheist Community of Austin. There are all kinds of super, super great emotes down there. I mean, who doesn't just want to spam the chat with Kenneth's face? Honestly, I mean, what a great dude. final thing, and we will grab some calls here in a minute, but below this live chat right here that you see, there is a fundraiser, and 100% of those proceeds go directly to the ACA. YouTube does not charge any fees, so that is a super, super great way to support us. And why not start off this new year, you know, with just something, I mean, let's be a little bit edgy, you know? Blayton, are you with me? I've got a number in mind for today's goal, and what I'm thinking, let's get 666. Just top of my head, I just came up with that. Totally has nothing to do with anything else. But yeah, that's our goal for today. So if you can, definitely help us out, you guys. It always means a lot to us, and it helps us keep coming to you every week and doing these fun shows. So before we grab a call, let's, you know, just in case, Blayton, because we know sometimes people are busy. We understand they don't always get around and see everything. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man. How did you get connected with the ACA? Like, who are you? What do you do? Like, give us a spiel.
I am, if you don't know, I am Blathis. I did it the wrong way. Blathis. So I am what I like to describe myself as is an atheist comedian. So I started my little YouTube channel a few years ago. Actually became an atheist pretty much watching the ACA. Like that was my big turn. Then I started to read the Bible more and I was like, oh, okay, cool. So now I'm like an online atheist activist slash comedian slash rapper, apparently, which started as a hobby and now it's kind of becoming more of a thing. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. And there's a couple of albums out there you've got, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah,
that's awesome. I love that truly, because I think there really is a lack of that atheist or secular or non-religious kind of music, and it's in all genres, right? But rap especially, there's I really can't think of anybody off the top of my head that's like, oh man, like this is like an atheist rapper, except for you and Barr. Those are the two that I know off the top of my head.
Yeah, got like, and it's mostly guys that I know, so like Oz and Lurch, like guys that I know.
Yeah, small community for sure. But again, I just think that's a place. I know there were so many different artists over the years, you know, when I was growing up that I would listen to, that there would be these just little hints of things every so often, you know, just like a lyric that just says like, you don't need religion to be a good person, you know, and that would just like stick with me because, you know, it's a good song and you're playing it regularly and you're having a good time with your buddies and you really start listening to the lyrics and you're like, oh man, this actually speaks to me. Like, this is something that is important. So I just think that's a good space, you know, for us as the non-religious, the atheist, the secular community to kind of jump in and, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say take over exactly, but I mean, like,
participate in.
Yeah. I like that's less like combative with it. Well, are
really
you
like, it's like hip hop is like a classically, I guess, historically African-American form of expression, right? So I've established over the last few times I've been here, African-American just community period, we're pretty much Christians
or
Muslim, or we have to have some kind of connection to a higher power just because, well, it's easier to sell hope to impoverished people and desperate people. And we've been kind of kept in that section for a couple hundred years. I don't know if you've been reading the news lately.
Yeah. I've heard a little bit about it over the years. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly it. And that's why, especially in that genre, there is so much, you know, I can think of a handful of different rock or blues or jazz or, you know, classic, you know, musicians that it's like, oh yeah, they clearly have these atheist or just non-religious themes kind of. But yeah, again, when it comes to the rap community and you hit it on the head, man, it's, there is a history of oppression. There is a history of, you know, not being able to have a voice. And in that space, yeah, it's understandable, I think, why so many of these religions get put in there, even though there's a bunch about slavery in them, you know?
Yeah, like, a lot. It's weird.
It's like way too much. Like, I know, I was reading something. What's that one parable? It's like the parable of like the wicked slave or the unforgiving servant or something. And it just like, it's a parable that Jesus told. And at the end of it, you're just like, oh my God, this is actually really bad. This is really horrible. Like, the moral of the story is this master was super kind to his slave and forgave all his debts. And then the slave goes out and like accrues more debt somehow. So the master like throws him in jail and like hopes that he's beaten and tortured for the rest of his life. And like it ends with Jesus being like, and that's what my father's gonna do to you if you don't be a good person. It's like, whoa, wait a second. That kind of came out of left field, man. Like, what the heck is this?
I don't think that's the flex that you think it is.
Exactly. You do not sound very loving and compassionate here. But you know, that's okay. Maybe somebody will call in today and correct us, Blayton. I mean, you know, I've heard some people say there is no slavery in the Bible. I've heard people say that.
People say that there is slavery in the Bible, and it's a good thing.
Ooh, yeah, that's even worse. I don't envy those people who are advocating that position. So, but let's see. Maybe we've got some calls on the line that have something to do with this, or at the very least, we'll give everybody a break from our jabbering. Let's go out to Maine. We've got Grant, he, him, and you are on the line with Blatant Blatheist and Secularity. How are you, Grant?
Hi, I'm doing good.
Yeah, thanks for calling us today. What do you got for us?
Sure. I wanted to talk with you folks about the way that I hear sometimes atheists, other atheists explain or ground morality.
Yeah.
And I often hear it kind of described in terms of agreeing on a set of goals and assessing whether certain actions are consistent with those goals. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't strike me as a good way to talk about it. I feel like it's too abstract, and I have a way that seems better to me. And I want you guys to tell me if I'm onto something or if I'm off base.
Yeah, give us a go. Run us through what you're thinking.
Okay, this is what I would say. I would say an action is immoral if and only if it can be reasonably inferred to result in greater suffering.
I'll stop you right here with the most obvious question, Grant, is just why?
Sure.
Why is it immoral if it causes greater suffering? I may agree with that, but what is the objective grounding for that?
Sure. So what I'm saying to you is that to me, this is the definition of what it means to be immoral. Okay. I'm defining immorality that way to start with.
Yeah. 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 And go ahead.
I feel like when we talk about morality, to me, it seems like, I've given this a little bit of thought, this is really what we're getting at. I feel like if I'm going to make an analogy, like, you know, we all know what water is, but many, many years ago, people didn't really understand that water was like a substance made of H2O molecules, right? But if they talked about water in a non-abstract way, that's what they were talking about. We now know water is H2O, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Our knowledge has expanded on that.
Right. I feel like it seems to me, and again, correct me, you know, tell me where you think I'm going wrong, that when we talk about morality, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about whether actions lead to greater suffering or not.
Mm-hmm. So I would just start off by saying, I think in general, Grant, where you're going is pretty much where I stand. And there are a lot of people that stand in that camp too, that kind of general well-being type thing. You know, is that completely defined? No, but we have some really good understanding, like cutting off somebody's head is not good for their well-being. You know, we're pretty solid on that.
Right.
The issue is that there are a handful of people, non-religious and religious, that fall into this other vein. So where you and I are at with agreeing on that is basically like, if what we're trying to say is that there is something more than just all of our collective, you know, desires, and it's just like, well, I don't like this, that's why it's immoral, then what we're saying is that there is something outside of the individual consciousnesses of people, right? And if we add all those up together, and that's just, you know, an ad populum, right? It's just an ad populum fallacy at that, because it's like, oh, well, it's not right when just the one person thinks it, but if we just add 100 people together, now it somehow is right. So the non-realists and the non-cognitivists and stuff, those are the people that would say that morality at the end of the day is just this completely made up, more or less, right? And there's a handful of people I know I've listened to in the past where they basically say like, hey, I agree, like we should try to minimize suffering, but the question is not whether or not I agree on that. The question is that something that is coming outside of me? Is that something that is separate from me? Because that's what we're talking about when we're talking talking about an objective morality more often than not. We're talking about something
right.
like
I
gravity or math, right? Like if I disappear tomorrow, it doesn't matter what I think about gravity either way, because the gravity's still going to be there, you know? And so that's where I think you would probably have some of the most pushback. When it comes sure. to a good handful of the realists, though, yeah, for sure, this is something that is used. And I would probably even argue, I think pretty much every single moral system we've ever codified out there is using that generalized well-being. It's just that they don't always apply it correctly or to the full extent, right? And so I think there's right. possibly
is that,
an
argument. Is that not evidence that there is and that is the standard for all kind of conversion in the same thing? If we all
now,
measure gravity at 9.8 meters per second squared, that we're onto the same thing? Is that not evidence to the fact?
I mean, if you look at even what you were saying, like just the way we learn more and we change over time with more information, morality isn't going to be the same morality 100 years from now, because we'll know more. We'll have different standards.
Right.
So it's never going to be an objective, concrete type of thing.
I think we can make a distinguish between what the standard of morality is, like what's the yardstick for measuring it, mm-hmm. and what we judge based on our limited information as being moral or immoral.
Sure.
Right.
So like, as we gain more knowledge,
like you,
we'll
you
get
and
better.
I might have a different judgment mm-hmm. about whether something is moral or immoral, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we disagree on the standard.
True. But the issue is that there are people out there who disagree with all of the standard, basically. And what they're saying at
so
the end
right
of the day is, well, I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, if I had that figured out, Grant, I'd be congratulating myself for my Nobel Prize, right? But
to me, this seems like the right way to define it. And I don't understand why people kind of go back, take that step back and say, well, it's a,
yeah,
you know,
and,
if you agree
my,
on goal, or we all seem to be talking about the same thing.
Yeah. And my biggest suggestion would just be, look into more of those people that take the label of non-cognitivist or moral non-realist, and go read through their arguments and see if they hold up for you. This is not the majority yeah. of the philosophers when they get polled for the Phil survey and stuff, but it is still enough of a group that you definitely have to deal with the arguments. And at the end of the day, they are arguments. And so it's worth to at least look at them, even if, again, basically everything you've said, Grant, I think I pretty much, you know, fall on the same page. I think Blayton is right there with us. It's just that there are some people who would still take the stance of, hey, what you're saying at the end of the day is basically, I just have this preference. And because of that preference, this is the right thing to do. And what they're saying is there's a break between
that. I prefer to do immoral things all the time. It's not about my preference.
Yeah, but you see kind of what they're saying is the determination for moral or immoral.
Kind of.
Yeah, and that's why I would just
sure.
say go look into that some more. I know J. Mike is a moral non-realist. I'm pretty sure on that because he's spoken about it. And
maybe
listening to
him, he's on, and I'll call him and talk to him about it.
Oh, he comes on Talk Even a good bit. Yeah, he's a regular here in AXP and stuff. And so definitely just, you know, check out the shows and see when he's on next. Because he always is very quick to say to people, you know, hey, look, I understand and I agree punching this guy in the face is the wrong idea. But the question is why? And from what you're saying,
yeah,
and not you specifically.
That's why.
Right, right. And the response from the non-realist would basically be something along the lines of like, well, that's just a personal preference. And there's nothing connected to the objective world outside of our individual brain states that makes that true, right?
Can we not establish that people experience suffering objectively? Is that not something we can establish? I mean, I realize the experience of suffering itself is objective, but isn't it objective that we experience suffering?
Yes. It's just that it isn't, that isn't indication that it means suffering is bad in that grand moral sense. We do experience suffering and we do seemingly like to avoid it, but that doesn't mean
right.
that it is something outside
I think,
of our
to me,
own
that's
preferences.
The definition of suffering is like, it's what you would try to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, again, pretty much everything you're saying, I'm like pretty lockstep with you, Grant. It's just, I'm trying to present the argument from the side of the people that would disagree very strongly. Yeah. But they'd still be pretty much all of those people that I know are non-religious. And so, you know, I still think they're using a better system than, you know, some book said something or some deity in the sky said something. But I've been rambling a bunch. Let me give it back to Blayton real quick. And then we'll let you go, Grant.
I think the only thing that I would say is like, when we're talking about suffering being what you would like to avoid, there are people that would like to avoid going outside. Like, I would like to avoid going to work, but so I suffer when I go to work, but it doesn't have any standard for morality. So again, all of this stuff is pretty much going to be
subjective. The way I would kind of see that is, so first of all, finish your thought. I thought you were going somewhere else. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're good.
All right. So just to be clear, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to define morality as evaluating whether actions will result in greater suffering.
Right.
So whether, like, if I do something, like if I go to work and I don't want to go to work, that's kind of like, for me, that's not really resulting in greater suffering in the large. And in fact, what I'm trying to do for myself is reduce my own suffering. I know I'm going to suffer more if I don't go to work.
Sure.
But it's not about, morality is not about my own personal suffering. It's suffering in the largest sphere of awareness that I have.
Yeah. And again,
if I find out like I'm chewing on a pencil causes suffering for aliens in another galaxy, somehow, to me, that makes it immoral now, if I'm aware of that.
Sure. Just be careful that we're not doing the same thing that we accuse the religious of by defining something into existence. Just because we define something a certain way doesn't mean that it is that necessarily. And that's where the crux of the issue is. I think
a lot of theists would say morality is what God says. Like, if you're deviating from what God wants you to do, you're doing something immoral. I was in a conversation with one of those people, I'd start playing the game of like, whose definition of morality better comports with how we actually use that word? And I feel good about my position in that conversation.
Yeah. And I
agree with you completely. Yeah. But yeah, it's just still, it's your standard.
Right. And again, there are others out there who have good arguments that I definitely think are worth taking into account. Doesn't mean that those are right.
Sure.
It just means, hey, definitely another great place to go and look. So non-cognitivists and moral non-realists and stuff. But Grant, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and giving us a call. That was a really good discussion. And I honestly love doing that. I love talking about morality and I love hashing it out, especially when we aren't, you know, beholden to this deity, right? I feel like the conversation about morality can actually progress. But yeah, any other thoughts on that before we go grab some other calls?
Yeah, I think that was a pretty good one. Yeah,
sweet. Yeah, it's a good way to start off the new year. And also another good way to start off the new year, folks, if you're already shopping on Amazon, you can actually support the ACA at no extra cost to you. All you got to do is visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA and designate the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity, and Amazon will donate a portion of their profit directly to the ACA. So you guys don't have to spend any more money or do much work at all. And if you want to get super cool things, because we've always got super, super awesome swag, well, you can do it because we've got a merch store, folks. We have all kinds of stuff, the t-shirts, the hoodies, the mugs, the phone cases. I mean, we're always taking suggestions. All you got to do is go to tiny.cc/merchACA and you can get all the fantastic ACA merchandise from all the great shows. There are some amazing, amazing. There was one about lizard people for Truth Wanted. I loved that shirt. It's a beautiful design. By the way, we also have a channel that houses all of the shows of the ACA in audio podcast form. Just check out tiny.cc/AENpodcast and you can hear the beautiful voices of all the wonderful hosts, but not have to see their faces. If that's your cup of tea, no judgment. I won't be upset about it. I won't cry. I promise. I might. But you can also become a member of the Talk Heathen community in our fan run Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBTHG. There is always wonderful things going on that page. There are fantastic people that help us out and mod that. Wonderful, wonderful fans. And we just absolutely love that space. And you can go there too and have a good time. And if you didn't know, folks, there's this thing, there's this app, the kids are into it. It's called like TikTok or TikTok, I think. Anyway, Talk Heathen, we have a TikTok. We have a TikTok now, okay? And our plan is to start going live before these shows on Sunday. But we got to make sure that we have like 1,000 like people. So go on TikTok. I know you've all got it because you're much hipper than me. Go subscribe to the Talk Heathen TikTok so that we can start doing those lives and can have some fun and just talking to people. You know, that's what we love to do. So.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Why not take a call and see if we have something good here? It looks like we have Aloke, he, him from California, is telling us that they think the ACA is going a bit too overboard on trans issues. Hey, Aloke, how are you?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling us. I'll just go ahead and let you know that Blayton and I, neither of us are trans individuals, but we are happy to comment and give our thoughts on this. So you think the atheist community of Austin is talking too much about trans issues? What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say if Dr. Ben or Katie were here, it might have been better. But I think with you guys not being trans, it's even better because what I was telling the screener was like just making this call itself, right? Having the nerve to do it makes me afraid of being called transphobe or hateful. And I think that level of thing in our society should not happen. We should have open, democratic, civil, decent dialogues without this fear, which happens a lot. And the main reason was that over the past few months, maybe a couple of years, I've realized that even very secular, liberal, far more liberal than maybe all of us, like supporting the Green New Deal or supporting universal basic income, extremely progressive liberal people are being rubbed the wrong way with the excessive push or focus on trans issues. I mean, just statistically speaking, I think they're 0.5 or 1% of the population. We have 14% of African Americans who are facing extreme discrimination, although I agree trans people are being killed the most and they're doing suicides the most, so they're the most tormented. But the pushback is more on these multiple pronouns, 72 pronouns, and who should be called what. And there's a lot of lack of education and misinformation.
Can I jump in here a second, Aloke? I want to make sure we can kind of have a little bit of a back and forth, because there's one thing that I think is kind of important. Just some questions and stuff. Just not coming at you, man. Just really just trying to understand where you come from, and I'll try to explain where I come from. Why are you said that before even making this call, one of the things that kind of held you back was you were concerned about being, you know, labeled or called a transphobe. Why are you concerned about that? I'm just genuinely, what's the reason that you wouldn't want to be called that?
Because based on my history of listening to many calls and social media and all, anytime you question it, you are looked at as either not educated or not informed enough about these issues.
So you don't want people to have a negative opinion of you? Is that the concern, that you're afraid that others will get a negative opinion of you and treat you negatively because of that? Am I understanding that? And again, this is not a trick question or anything. This is just serious, because that's a really good place to start. Why is it uncomfortable as somebody who could potentially be in that space of being labeled as somebody who's transphobic? I'll give you my answer. The reason that I don't want to be labeled as transphobic is because I know that that means that something I said or did potentially was very harmful to an individual and very destructive to a community. Because of that thing that we were talking about with Grant just a second ago about trying to minimize suffering, I know that the more things that I do in my life that even get close to that vein of anti-Semite or racist or homophobic, those things are bad. And those things are things that I should try to avoid, not so that other people don't look at me negatively, but so that the harm is reduced to that individual and that community. And what I would say is that this absolutely is something that is fully, fully in the atheist wheelhouse. And one of the reasons that I say that is because so often the religious side are using their religious understandings to hurt people. And one of the groups that is being heavily, heavily targeted right now, especially in the US, are trans people. And this is something that absolutely I am not going to stay quiet about. I'm not going to be quiet when there is obvious harm. Like you said, you even brought it up. Like, yeah, trans people are being murdered in the streets. That's not just freaking anecdote. That's data. We've got that. And that's horrible. And I think that's where we should all be coming from, right? If somebody comes up to me and they say, man, you're a racist piece of shit, my response isn't going to be something along the lines of, oh gosh, I don't want people to think like I said something, you know, bad. My response is, what did I do that caused harm? And how do I prevent that in the future? And how do I help other people prevent that in the future? I understand sometimes it may feel like, you know, it's just that you skip an episode or two and you think, oh no, we're talking about trans issues again. But it, you know, for me, in my opinion, I am always happy to talk about human rights. And I don't think there's ever a time where we are talking about it too much, you know, whatever it is, whatever the issue is, whatever group it affects. But let me stop for a second. I want Blayton to jump in here and then we'll give it right back to you.
I think the other thing that Loke said that kind of caught my attention was we were talking about the lack of education that people have around this issue. If we don't talk about it, how are we going to educate people on it? And you say that you're kind of uncomfortable being labeled as something, but I want you to think about it not from this aspect. I want you to think about it like, let's say we put another label out there. Let's say someone's calling into the show and saying, hey, I get it. George Floyd died. It's sad. But can we talk about something other than all this black stuff? Like, how do you think that goes? Like, how do you think who's going to respond in a positive light to that? You know what I mean? So like, you have to look at the actual issue. These people are being harmed. These people are being marginalized. These people are being targeted. So yeah, we're going to talk about it. We have to stand up for them the same way we ask them to stand up for us. Because I remember when BLM was becoming this huge thing, there were trans people being harmed for protesting for Black Lives Matter. They were being targeted by Black people during these protests. So they are a target within a target within a target. So if we don't continue to speak up for them, and them being this very, very marginalized group, if we don't have a louder voice for them, they're going to continue to be marginalized.
Alok, what are your thoughts, man? I know, gave you a lot.
Yeah, so I think because Blayton brought up BLM. So a simple example would be when the riots started and some people started saying that, you know, the injustice and the gross killing of innocent black men especially has been unacceptable. And some of these riots are acceptable. And many people are like, no, violence is not acceptable at all. On the same lines, the reason I said secularity that I'm afraid of calling is because even when in my opinion, I present cogent or I can present or I hear cogent arguments from people I respect that some of this, like the 72 pronouns is just over the board and stuff like that. So then it kind of makes sense to me. And just making that argument sometimes gets a response like you don't know enough. You've not been trans. You've not been with a trans person. So any kind of counter argument is immediately shot down in that vein. So we probably agreed on 95% of trans is natural or nature and all of that. But the counter arguments from the other side are so caustic that the argument is shut down.
Yeah. I'm not advocating for anytime somebody is having these discussions or questioning in good faith that we should just shut them down and just not talk to them. Honestly, even as controversial as this is sometimes, and I understand, I think even the most hardcore of far right transphobes, you know, anti-Semite, Christian national, I think even the most ridiculous of the ridiculous, we still have to have this dialogue with them, because I truly believe that is the best way to have this, you know, change that we want to see. And I think one question for sure, Alok, is when you're in those situations, and this is not like a dig at you or anything, this is just just something that I try to do regularly. And I advocate this for other people because it's incredibly helpful. The question you ask yourself is, who am I being in this moment that I'm getting this response? Who am I right now? How am I behaving? What is my character in this moment? What am I saying? What am I doing that this is the response from others? Now, that doesn't mean that there's always going to be a time where you're being, you know, that doesn't mean that there's never going to be a time you're being the nice, rational, calm person and the other person is completely off the rails. Of course, that's the case. But so often we are looking out the window, right? We're looking at our neighbor and seeing what they're doing wrong when what we need to do is we need to look in the mirror and we need to ask ourselves who we're being and how we're behaving. In those instances where, yeah, absolutely. I've had a lot of tough conversations my whole freaking life. You know, I love that stuff. There have definitely been times where people have accused me of a handful of different things. And honestly, that thing I said probably was a little racist. It probably was a little transphobic, you know, like this particular action probably was bigoted in a way that honestly, I just didn't even think about, because that's what a lot of bigotry is. It's just background noise. It's just baked into society. And you don't realize it until somebody does have you know, the voice and the ability to say like, hey, man, what you did right there was actually kind of fucked up, you know? And in that moment, again, where I try to go, I'm not perfect, of course not, but where I try to go is, who am I being? Who was I just now that I got called out? How can I fix that? What can I do better? And if I genuinely don't understand, I ask. But it's not everybody's place to educate all the time. And if I'm standing at the grocery store checkout line and I want to have a big talk about reparations and all this, that's just not the place, man. That's just not the place, you know? But that's okay, because that's a moment where I said something, I did something, somebody stood up and called me out, and I take it on the chin and I go, that's a mistake. Let me think about it. Let me go ask some friends. Let me try to understand. But yeah, give us some last thoughts here, Alok, and we're going to let you go, because we got a couple of other people that want to talk to us. So
yeah, thank you both. I'll keep it short. I think the success of the gay community has been great. The gradual baby steps and the protests and people realizing their friends and families have a gay member, I think that would be a better solution, in my opinion. It has worked so successfully, and now we have like 70% support for gay marriage. I think that would be my prescription, but thank you both a lot.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alok. We appreciate it. Yeah, I feel like that's, you know, there's always an opportunity for us to learn and do better. And I just think if we've got that opportunity, why not take it, you know?
But let me also think, it's like it's a big thing to how you approach this. If you go in with the thought of, okay, I'm just going to listen because I want to know more about this, then yeah, go in it with that. There's no need to be defensive if you go in with just, okay, let me take in this information. You don't have anything to defend there.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a really, really good point. Exactly. And we are just stacking up on the calls, Blayton. People want to talk to us. I love it, man. Let me get through this, which is, I know you already know, but I'm going to remind you anyway, because right after this show, starting at 3 p.m. Central Time today, is the flagship show of the ACA, the nonprofits, and you can find that at tiny.cc/YTNP. So right after this show ends, 3 p.m. Central Time, you know where to go, but if you don't, tiny.cc/Y, we make it. We love hearing from you. We want to know what, you know, you think of what we've got, if it was good, if it was bad, if we just totally were wrong. We want to know. Honestly, we want to hear it. So just email us at tv@atheist-community.org. That is the best place to reach out to us. It is super easy. And, you know, we also want you to know what's going on. And we've got stuff happening at the ACA all the freaking time. And we want to make sure that you're updated. And to do that, we got a website. So www.atheist-community.org. You can learn about the organization itself, all the policies, and how you personally can get involved, because we are actually, we are always looking for some more help. And if you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. So with that, though, we have some calls, and it looks like we're going to go talk with Emmanuel. He, him in Texas is going to help us understand a little bit more about slavery in the Bible. How are you, Emmanuel?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
That's that amazing.
Tell us what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts, man?
I don't know how I could relate. You know, I didn't grow up in America and stuff. I grew up in Africa. So I just want to say that a lot of people don't actually understand what the and slavery and servanthood. So
we're cutting in a little in and out here, Emmanuel. If you're moving or walking or anything, just stand still for me. But keep going. If it gets too bad, we'll yell it.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't actually understand what scripture says about slavery or servanthood. You know the Bible. Hello?
Well, we're still here. We're just trying to, we're just waiting until you actually give us anything. Cause I can just cut in real quick and just tell you, like, you know, I'm sure not an expert, you know, poor little SR over here is just not that bright. But the experts, the people who for instance, say, I don't know, there's this guy by the name of like Dr. Josh Bowen, who I think got like a Fulbright scholarship or something, which basically means you're like super incredibly smart, but like he's pretty knowledgeable on it. And, you know, it's definitely slavery. It's definitely owning a human being. Is every instance of that in the Bible that? No. But are like pretty much all of them? Yes. Yes. Pretty much every single instance in the Bible that is discussed is chattel slavery, exactly the same as it was in the South in the U.S. What am I not understanding?
Yeah. It's kind of different because, if you see the New Testament, particularly, it says Ephesians 6 and verse 5 says that servants obey your masters, be subject to your masters as you would obey Christ, right? So you could also look at
cut out again. Yeah, there, man, we're right there. I'm gonna go ahead and cut in because that's already a no for me.
Like, yeah, I'll be back in the queue, Emmanuel. We're gonna see if maybe we can get the audio a little bit better. But yeah, blatant. Tell us your thoughts on that. I know I've got some.
So if the creator of the universe, the master of the universe, the all father per se, if he's gonna tell me that I'm supposed to obey my master on earth, I'm gonna say no to that. That's already a deal breaker for me. So I'm not sure where we're going to go from there, but I'm very interested to hear your take on it.
I agree. It's like the very first step is wrong. The very first step is wrong. And it's like, whoa, okay. I mean, we can try to come up with some better understanding of this, but like one of the things that really opened my eyes to the understanding of biblical slavery was how Jesus talked about it. And the way that Jesus talked about slavery was something as if it was super commonplace, that it was just like, that's just what we do. We just grab people and put freaking chains on. But it looks like it might be fixed, Emmanuel. Hopefully it is. If not, we'll always have you call back in. But go ahead, tell us what are we misunderstanding about the slave Bible? Well, that's okay. We tried, we gave it our best. I'm not gonna say, because you know I don't have any evidence for this, I'm not gonna say that it's because he was afraid to defend such a ridiculous position. That's not what I'm gonna say. I won't do it. I won't mention that. But it is a ridiculous position. So that's okay. Maybe we'll get some other things about slavery. Again, I don't know why you would ever want. I feel like if you're ever on the side of being like, yeah, you know, it's okay to put some people in slavery, I just feel like you should really do a hard look at yourself. That's definitely
like it. My thing is always like when people go to that, well, Jesus said, like, I want you to put yourself into the shoes of the most powerful being in the universe, the one that makes the rules with your morality that you have right now. I want you to ask yourself, would you say, A, slaves obey your masters, or B, hey, don't own people because that's messed up?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. You know, it's a shame I don't have all of that, you know, knowledge and power and compassion that the Almighty Creator, Yahweh. Anywho, we know you get busy, folks. We know you don't always have time. But the ACA hosts a bunch of other shows other than Talk Heathen. We've got the flagship show, Nonprofits, right after this. We've got Secular Sexuality on Thursdays, Truth Wanted on Fridays, and then the Atheist Experience later on today. And if you missed some, here's just a little taste of what you want to go back and
What has your experience been? What tips can you give? What does it look like for somebody who's maybe just getting started? And
I can always give more than just the tip.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
You know, I mean, we've always been taught about the great I am. And,
of course. Yeah, we've been crying.
But where the hell did this come from?
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs.
You know, maybe it's my good looks. I don't know. They feel like they always need to tell me about Jesus. And
it's not
and
your good look.
And it's not. No, it's definitely not. They're trying to keep themselves just praying.
You just have that face that you need to be saved, honey.
Even then, Ben, atheists on Twitter will argue all day do we lack a belief? Do we claim that a God isn't real? You know, like there's even semantics there as to what actually an atheist even is.
I didn't get to meet myself until I was in my 20s. And I hope that today's kids get options before that to really meet themselves while they're young. So you can have your closed-minded ideas, but I don't think that it's improving anything. And the data shows that.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back, folks. And if you can arrange to be in the Austin area between January 26th and 29th, why not come down to the studio audience at the ACA Free Thought Library for live broadcasts of Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, Talk Heathen, and The Atheist Experience. The doors will open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday and noon on Sunday. And parking is where you can find a legal spot after the lot is full, but there is lots of parking around, I've been told. And if you can't make it in January, that is okay, because we will continue to broadcast live from the library the last week of each month. So just make sure to keep watching this show, all the other great ACA shows, and go check out the website for news and information as we expand our in-studio offerings in the near future. And by the way, I mentioned this earlier, I teased it. If you're in the local Austin area, the ACA is actually looking for more hosts and crew members to help out with these awesome shows. So if you are hanging out there and you're like, man, I would love to go assist with some audio, video, hosting, just anything. Hey, why not send an email to tv@atheist-community.org and the production team will be in touch with you. So that is awesome. And we always love having more and more people here because it helps grow this wonderful community and allows us to take calls where people are, advocating for slavery. So we have some other calls, and it looks like we are going to talk with Jamar, him up in Pennsylvania. And you have a question about reparations and atheists. And what do you got for us, Jamar?
I was just concerned. I want to know, what is your personal stance when it comes to Black Americans this side of town whose lineage goes back to slavery? What's your stance on reparations? Don't you believe that we should receive, reparations?
I could take that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you talked about this before.
No, well, one second. I want the other guy to take that.
I'll gladly give you my thoughts on reparations. First off, I just want to say atheists as a collective aren't like necessarily for or against anything, right? So anything other than the question of is a God real, right? So like as a community, I don't think we have like a stance. My thoughts generally
So you don't care?
No. What I'm saying is the atheist community, quote unquote, as a whole, like we don't have like a standard, answer on this. It's not like we all check boxes and like that. All we do is we're just like, hey, you don't believe in a God? I don't believe in a God. Great. So the rest of it, we hash out amongst ourselves. Hang on just a second. I'm almost done, I swear. When it comes to reparations in the United States, my answer may sound like a cop out, but it's also really simple, which is there are a lot of people that have actually studied this way more than me, and those are the people that I look to, plain and simple. I don't try to come up with any understandings on my own because I don't have the historical knowledge. I don't have the sociological knowledge. I'm saying I do not believe that my knowledge base is enough to effectively make an argument on either side. I have listened to many arguments on both sides. I understand them, but I don't think this is really something that I should be the forefront, you know, talking about and hashing it out.
Well,
like I said, there are a lot of other people that are much more. Well, hang on just a second, because I want to give Blayton a chance to throw out his thoughts, and
well,
then we'll
actually,
go back
I wanted to talk to you about this, to be perfectly honest. I wanted you to give your response.
I appreciate what you want, Jamar. And, you know, sometimes in life, you just can't always get that thing that you're looking for. Me being the person who's in charge of this show today, I'm going to give it to Blayton so that he can give his thoughts, and then we'll send it back to you. And if you want to question me specifically, go for it. But Blayton's going
to
talk.
So just to piggyback off what SR was saying. So, yeah, like he was saying, atheist just means it's the answer to one question. I don't believe in God. So this isn't my atheist perspective on reparations. This is Blayton's perspective. So where I come from with it, like, I do think we deserve reparations. Absolutely. I think it's the right thing to do. Absolutely. But I don't think it should come in the form of monetary compensation. And that's not even just because, like, oh, we're going to mess it up or anything like that. I don't think it should come in the form of monetary compensation because I don't see our current government implementing these checks in a way that we would all be compensated. Let's put it that way. I don't see it being carried out in a way that's not means tested. And the most likely means test will be trying to prove your lineage to slavery. And the way that America has gone over the last few hundred years is our lineage has been broken. Most Black people in America, I've said this before, we don't know anyone past grandma or great grandma. So how do you prove your lineage? So if it's going to be means tested that way, which it most likely will be, I don't think monetary compensation is going to help. I think the best way to have reparations in America is systemic reparation, fixing the actual system. So we all start off at an even standpoint in this rat race. So that's my thought on it.
And as far as reparations, hello?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you just not listen to anything that Blayton just said?
No, I heard him. I heard him as far as systemic reparations.
Okay, good. It was a really well thought out point and one that helped me change my opinion. So good. Okay, yeah. Give us your thoughts. Shout back.
I want to give my reply. Okay. My response is this. When it comes to Jewish people, when it comes to Native Americans, when it comes to any other group that's been historically aggrieved, reparations was not an arguing point. Now, my thing is, when it comes to atheism and the whole sector as far as, you know, the atheist community, when you bring up certain categories such as God and what's moral and immoral, one thing you guys do is talk about minimizing harm. And when it comes to harm, I think we all can see, and this is a common sense question or common sense statement, we've suffered a lot, you know what I'm saying, through history. It's not like, you know, slavery was oh so long ago. Slavery has taken many different shapes, and the 13th Amendment actually is a loophole when it comes to slavery extended / the prison industrial complex. And my thing is, this should be something about justice. You know, the Bible mentions reparations for slavery. If you check 1 second, Jeremiah chapter 22, 13 to 17. One second. If I'm turning to you for some kind of moral standard and you're all over the place with that, and this is common sense, then how can you tell me that you're dealing for some kind of morality?
Did you say 13? You said Jeremiah 22, 13 to 17?
I did. Jeremiah chapter 22, 13 to...
Sweet. Let me just read it real quick. What I have here is, woe to him who builds his palace by unrighteousness, his upper rooms by injustice, making his own people work for nothing, not paying them for their labor. He says, I will build myself a great palace with spacious upper rooms, so he makes large windows in it, panels it with cedar, and decorates it in red. Does it make you a king to have more and more cedar? Do not your father have food and drink? Did he did what was right and just, so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and needy, so all went well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? But your eyes and your heart are set only on dishonest gain, on shedding innocent blood, and on oppression and extortion. I don't know how, unless you're just like really trying to see reparations in that talks anything about reparations. I don't know how, like, you can take the stance of, oh, it's trying to tell you to be nice to your laborers and stuff, but nowhere in there would it has a clear chance to say something like, hey, you should, you know, find some way to compensate these people that you own.
I mean, like, the big thing is with, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but with me, if you start your point with, well, well, the Bible says, I'm already out. I really don't care what the Bible says.
No, well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I'm comparing it to your answers as it pertains to reparations. That's the only thing I'm comparing it to.
Okay.
Your stance is we shouldn't receive it. The Bible stance is woe to him who you know, saying practice this kind of stuff without payment.
No, my stance is we shouldn't receive it in the form. My stance is we shouldn't receive reparations in the form of monetary compensation.
Right.
And that is because I don't believe that. No, hold on. That is because I don't believe that the money will come to everyone that deserves it. If you fix the if you fix the system, everybody benefits. That is the most moral way to carry out reparations, where everybody benefits. America rises when all ships rise, right? The rising tide raises all ships, right?
No,
you fix the system.
We were specifically agreed for hundreds and hundreds of years. When the Jewish people were agreed, they didn't give out reparations to people.
I was
going to
get to that too. I'm glad you got there. Hold on. Because that also goes to how it should work for us systemically. Because when you look at the Jewish community that received reparations from America, or the Japanese community that received the form of reparations from America, when they got theirs, it was what, a few years removed from when they were aggrieved? So you could track down these people. You could say, hey, I know you were, because we have these records. What record do I have as a Black American man that says that my lineage can be traced back to slavery?
Easy. Ancestry. We aren't far removed from slavery. It's not like it happened.
But hang on, Jamar.
That's not the point. That's not the point.
Because literally, Blayton already talked about that in the very first thing that he said, which is why I wanted to give him that chance, because he's got a very nuanced thought on it. You know, it's something that is very specific in trying to account for the systems that exist today, right? And so one of the things that he mentioned as to why he is against the idea of just essentially a check that just comes to all Black people in the US is because one of the ways that we could use to show that these people are owed this reparation is through ancestry and saying, yes, we can trace you back. And now we know who your great, 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 great grandfather was. But that was what Blayton said from the beginning, is that so much of the Black community, that ancestry has been purposefully erased, not lost, erased. People have gone through the records with the intention of making it impossible to track down your ancestors as a Black person in the US. That was his response to that. So with that, now what are your
ancestry? If you've emigrated here from another place, then you know, basically that's where it traces back to. You can trace back your ancestry as a Black American. You can ask your parents, they can tell you the grandparents. We aren't far removed from the founding of this nation. And I feel like a lot of this stuff is just trying to bog the point.
Here's the thing. We don't have records of that. You can't prove that in a legal sense. Of course, I can ask my mom and she can ask her. Well, she can't even ask her mom because my grandma's passed. But we could try to trace it back ourselves, but the records aren't there. They've been purposefully destroyed. Like, even look at like Black people in America that have Native American ancestry, right? A lot of us can't get our rights as a Native American. Like, just look at the Cherokee Nation. Like, we can't get our rights from them because we can't prove our lineage to them, even if our DNA says, yes, you have Cherokee DNA. Even if I could show them, hey, look, I have my great grandmother's lock of hair. Her hair was really long. My family still has her hair because we're proud of this lineage. I cannot go to a Cherokee Nation or go to any reservation and say, hey, I'm one of you guys, because they're going to say, prove it. And I'm going to say, well, how? The records have been destroyed. That's what I mean. And you try to take that back another 100 years.
This is a ducking and a dodging. This not apply to any other group.
Like, it's a very poignant point. Like, I feel like it's a logical.
Yeah. It's a very, very good defeater for the argument of, well, it will be easy to just give out reparations to people in the U.S. It is the defeater. That's what I'm saying. When I heard Blayton lay this out before on another episode of an ACA show, I was like, yeah, that is a really, really good point that I hadn't brought into calculation, because we are going to want to have some type of system in place to ensure that we're giving the most amount of people we can that qualify for this and the least amount of fraud. And so what would be that method? And off the top of my head, ancestry, that's a great method. The problem is that it is specifically in a community who, once again, the records of their history has purposefully been destroyed. It has purposefully been mixed up and lost and you know, written over. And that's the actual history. And if that's the freaking case, then what we're saying is we're going to institute this program and there's going to be like 5% of the people that actually deserve this program, actually deserve this compensation, they will be shit out of luck every time. And that's why Blatant mentioned the systemic aspect, specifically going after communities that are minority-based, largely more Black, largely more Latino, these types of communities, and purposefully putting in more money to the community, because that is something that, again, for decades, we have purposefully done the opposite. I'm going to stop ranting.
If you look at things like redlining, those practices, like everything that has kept, just redlining alone has destroyed the inner city school. Yes. Like that alone has put us back 100 years behind everyone else.
Yeah. And I think those points are really, really good. And Jamar, thank you for calling in. We do appreciate that. We are going to let you go so that we can grab a couple more calls, because we're getting close near the end here. I got to shout out some top five patrons. But yeah, really, I think that's a very good point, Blatant, about that inability to prove in court for so many people their history, their ancestry. That and the idea of saying, like, where are we going to see more benefit? And yeah, for sure, putting that money into the community, putting that money into Black-owned businesses, you know, for God's sakes, just fix the sidewalks some places. Like, it's just that simple. Like,
there will be so much solved just by actually making education and healthcare a right in America. So yeah. Much will be solved with just that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. There will be a time in like the future, in like 150 years, where they're like, you know, there'll be some like 4-year-old. Yeah, they'll be like, teacher, why didn't they just take care of people and make sure that they were alive and educated? It's like, it was a different time, kid.
It was a different time. They had slaves like a year before that. It was a different time.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, every week on Talk Even, we shout out the top five patrons. And if you would like to get your name shouted out, you can do so very easily. You go to patreon.com/patreonth, and then you might get your name read out like this. We've got number one, Eric Tweet, number two, Dingleberry Jackson, number three, Ayami, number four, Devor Valjean, number five, the Bearded Skeptic of TikTok, and the honorable mention this week is for Mark Legusker. I probably said that wrong, Mark, and I'm terribly sorry. So if you want your name read out poorly by one of the awesome hosts here, you know what to do. Go to patreon.com and help out Talk Even and all the wonderful stuff at the ACA. But I'm going to take this next one. I'm going out to Tennessee. It looks like this is he, him, Bar. Is this Bar? Is this who I think it is?
Yeah, I know that voice.
Hey, it's good to see you, man. This is a friend of Blatant and Mine's. He's a great guy. How are you, Bar? It's good to hear from you.
I am doing good. I woke up. My family was on Talk Heat. I said, I got to call. They don't know.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't talked to Blatant in so long. I kind of shed a little tear when I saw him on the show. I said, I got to call him.
Man. Yeah, what you got for us? It says you want to talk about the irony of the Black community worshiping a God that endorses slavery. I think both of us might have some thoughts on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So before I say anything, I won't be long. I agree with what you were saying about the last caller, Blatant. I just want to say I agree with you. Okay, so when it comes to the irony of this whole thing, so it's like, you know, Memphis, Tennessee, the Bible Belt, everybody that you know worships God. Everywhere you go is, I mean, it's just like they're literally churches next door, three churches back to back on the same street. Like everybody that's any type of anything worships a God here. And so, you know, I I just can't help but find myself always thinking every time I see or hear somebody saying, you know, God helped me do that, or man, God bless me with this. I got a way to work. You know, I found a new job, my keys, my home, my family. And I'm just like, I understand that, you know, these things are viewed as good to you, but and I'm not trying to like hate on nobody for having good things or good things happening to them. It's just like, ironic part, and the part I'm always upset a little bit, because it's like I just want to tell them, like, you do realize that not long ago, the same God, if we talk about the same God, this exact same deity watched as your ancestors, people that you come from, they hung people from trees, owned them as property, beat them, have them chopped your foot off if you tried to run, take your kids and sell them. I'm like, you're thanking that same God for helping you find your job, as if like, do you think there's a like you worshiping a different God, or like maybe you think he's changed over time? Like, no, this is the exact same one. And I just feel like everybody's selfish and self-centered when it comes to God, because they're only thinking about the good that happens to them. But like, what about everybody around you? You know what I'm saying? It's millions and billions of us that ain't getting nothing. And they just worshiping and thinking the same thing that let this shit happen to everybody else. But I just wanted to hear y'all thoughts on that.
Yeah, I like where you're coming from with that. And I'm thinking what you said about like how they are self-centered. Like, absolutely. Because like, how big do you have to feel to think that the creator of the universe helped you find your keys this morning? Like, seriously, like, does it get more self-centered than that? But even like, you don't even have to go all the way back to slavery. Like, just what recently happened in the NFL when DeMar collapsed. I saw all over like Facebook, Twitter, like just black people that I know. When he finally had his tube removed and he was speaking again, everybody said, praise God. Oh, God came through. And it's like, but God just watched him like almost die on the field. And then the doctors came and saved his life. If everybody just prayed and let him stay on the field, like, no, God got this, he wouldn't be here right now. So what are we thanking God for? Like, it's just, it's a weird, weird cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something for me that, you know, this is why I like listening to people like y'all too. And Cynthia McDonald and, you know, Jenna Miu and Mandisa Thomas, Afro Atheist. Yes, there's so many wonderful people that help me to understand that perspective. And honestly, just the complete and total loneliness that you experience sometimes, because you are surrounded by people who, you know, these are the people that are supposed to be there to support you and to love you and to help you through things. And time again, the response is, you know, put it on God, you know, don't ask me for help. Like, put it on God. You know, why aren't you praying harder? You know, why don't you believe more? Why don't you have faith? You know, mustard seeds, right? Faith of a mustard seed. It's something that is absolutely one of the reasons why I love the Black Nonbeliever. And I love that organization, because and organizations like it, this is a portion of people that time and time again do not have a space. Time and time again. And I just feel like that is something that is so easy. If we care about human beings, if we care about minimizing suffering, and we care about truth, well, then the truth is, you're freaking human and you deserve a freaking space. And if that's not there, then I want to help try to provide one of those. I want to try to help support those spaces. Other than y'all, I'm going to be honest, I think all of my other black friends are Christian, like really hardcore evangelical. I don't think I've ever actually put that together right now, man. That's weird. All of my atheist friends online and stuff, but
like, man, I was saying earlier, like, it's much easier to sell hope to marginalized people. It's much easier to sell them, hey, your good is on the other side of this. Keep on trucking. Like, it's so easy to give somebody hope when that's all they have.
Yeah, man.
It's lonely at the top, man. God, man. When you spoke about having the space, man, it's like, man, it ain't nobody. Like, nobody. I have yet to meet a non-believing person. All of y'all are through the screen, you know, the internet people. I have yet to meet one in person, man. I have, like, man, you lose it all. You lose the family, the friend, everybody thinks I'm wrong with you. And it's like you have to sit back and watch the people you love do the cognitive dissonance thing, do the self-centered thing, the selfish-minded thing, you know, thanking God, like praising God, worshiping. It bothers me. It's going to always bother me. I'll be trying to ignore it and let people believe what they believe. But these are my people. These are my folks. This is my family we talking about here. You know, if you saw your brother, you know, about to overdose on crack, when you slap the needle, you will slap it out of his hand. You will tell him go the other way. I look right. at this.
See, but that's what helps me get through it, though, Bard. That's what helped me get through it, because I know the way that I feel, like I just want to knock that book out your hand so you can finally get some sense. They're looking at me saying, I don't want you to go to hell. Like, so it's love both ways. So yeah. I try not to be offended by it.
And that's tough. And that's tough. Mm-hmm. That is a tough freaking thing to remember, especially like you said, when you are seeing your family struggle, when you are seeing the people that you care about so much. And they are just time and time again, just going through just shit. And instead of doing anything, they are putting it on God and they are praying on it. Right. In those moments, I totally understand. I totally understand, dude. It's like, shit, like I am beaten down by this, you know, but it is that drive that I see coming from people like you, coming from people like Blayton, you know, Will Judy, these people that are just out there day in and day out, standing on the front lines, you know, really trying to communicate and trying to get this message across that there are better ways to do stuff. There are better ways for us, and there are more true things. And that is so deeply important, because the more true things that we understand, the more likely we are to make better decisions for ourselves and our community as a whole. But man, yeah, I gotta say, I'm right there with you, Bar. It is frustrating. You know, off camera, I won't say what extracurricular activities I participate in, but every now and then I have to have one of those extracurricular activities to calm down. But anything else you want to say, my man, before we let you go? We loved having you call in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, man. One last thing. I mean, you know, I love y'all both, man. Y'all my family. Y'all my brothers. And I just, man, you know, we fighting a good fight over here. That's all I can say. I appreciate y'all for, you know, letting me on, man.
Yeah, man. It was good to talk to you. You be good, Bar. I know we will talk again before too long. Good dude.
I'm seeing you a beat too today, bro.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So y'all be looking out. The new track will be dropping soon. Blayton is quick on that stuff. But I think we have time for one more call before we go. And actually, I think this next call might be somebody who everybody is pretty excited to hear from. Is this the wonderful Cynthia from the nonprofits?
You know, last time I checked and looked in the mirror, I do believe that this is Cynthia from the nonprofits. How y'all doing?
Oh my God. We are great. We are always excited when the wonderful Cynthia McDonald graces us with her thoughts. What do you have for Blayton and I to wrap out this show tonight?
Yes. Well, I wanted to talk with you guys about the call that you just got from Jamar. And also, and shout out to Bar too. Miss you, buddy. But I wanted to specifically talk about two points that I believe that Blayton, that you brought up concerning about. Yes, you believe that reparations are deserved. However, you did not think that it should be in monetary compensation. And both of you all, I believe, said that it would be difficult to prove lineage. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't want to straw man anybody. I just want to make sure that this is something that both of you all said. Cool? Is that correct? I
believe
you
said
yes. All right, great. I know there's a delay thing going on here. We'll try to work through it. Bear with us, audience. Okay, so I wanted to address this specifically because this is generally an argument that is brought up concerning reparations, why we should not look at monetary compensation. So a couple things that I want to bring up. Slavery in of itself, from the time of its inception that we had dealing with it even before the United States was the United States, was a capitalistic institution. In other words, money was absolutely made off of this particular institution. Mm-hmm. So we had money coming from the buying and selling of slaves, the labor that they produced in order for them to grow and harvest goods, and also other services that slaves actually render during that particular institution. There is an economist, he's German, and his name escapes me right now, and I'm really upset about that. But regardless, I'll come back and give you guys the name later on, because I talk to you all on a regular, especially you, Sec. He did the calculations and said, if we look at labor alone through slavery and also throughout the years encountering inflation, that you'll be looking at $6.9 quadrillion in rate in lost labor alone. Yeah, it's like a ridiculous number. Yeah. It's like a ridiculous number. But we know that paying $6.9 quadrillion to the descendants of chattel slavery or American freedmen is not sustainable. The government in of itself, on credit wise, is worth, last time I checked, about $270 trillion, roughly. Yeah. So
a little bit off that number, that 6.9.
Just a tad. So when we're actually having a proper conversation about reparations, so one of the things that I did want to address is the first thing about monetary compensation. Mm-hmm. No reparations program that happened in the United States did not happen without some type of monetary compensation. I'll give you an example. So if we look at some of the Native American tribes or the indigenous people that did receive compensation from the government from broken contracts, money was actually rendered. And the way that they were able to do it without it being fraudulent is actually creating an office where these particular checks are being doled out of. There mm-hmm. is an Office of Indian and Bureau Affairs. Yeah. And those checks are coming directly from the Treasury. Okay. So that office is funded through any type of markup for budget through Congress. And then it's doled out, and for whoever is registered with the Indians of Bureau of Affairs, and they actually meet the criteria for them to actually receive compensation from the government, they get it. Okay. So that's the way, anytime that a reparations program from the federal level happens, offices can be created, and also within partnership of the Treasury can actually dole out checks to make sure that it's not going through some type of third party issuance, so that it could be not fraudulent or cut down on fraud as much as possible. Now, mm-hmm. the next thing I want to address is the lineage thing. Now, there are people who make the argument that a lot of our lineage, those who come from slavery, has a lot of lost records, so it will be next to impossible to prove your lineage. I can tell you, gentlemen, right now, I was able to trace my lineage in 30 minutes on a Sunday afternoon. Now, how did I do that? I did that through utilizing ancestral websites, starting with my parents' name, and I was able to go back and using census records in order for me to be able to see exactly when my family was starting to show up in the United States. And also, the 1870 is the first census record that you actually had ex-slaves being counted in the United States. And often their occupation, whether if it said farmer, homemaker, maid, something to that effect, more than likely those people who had those occupations can be traced in also within the institution of slavery. Another issue that we can overcome per se when it comes to lineage is that there's other records that have been kept that are actually in pretty good condition. We have a lot of bills of sales available. as far as like being able to trace and records for people who were bought and sold through the institution. And also we have family Bibles, not necessarily, you know, condoning biblical stuff, because we already know this ain't that. But oftentimes people had kept their family trees and lineage and things of that nature in their family Bible. I was privileged to talk to some of my former clients that are people who have been here for multiple generations, who actually still have their family Bible. Even in my family, on the southern side, we still have our family Bible, and we were able to trace lineage back into the 1800s. And then the last thing that I wanted to bring up is that Black immigration was to the right of the decimal point until 1965. Mm-hmm. Wow. Black immigration was very small, very minute. Majority of people who happened to be Black, African American, that you could see that were born previously or what have you before 1965, more than likely were indigenous to the United States. And I use that term loosely. I'm just meaning that their family has been here multiple generations, more than likely came through chattel slavery. Okay. It wasn't until you had a change in the laws when it came to immigration, from 1965, which often came through the Civil Rights Acts of 1964, were you able to actually open up more Black immigrants coming to the United States. Matter of fact, I think that I know that you know, Sec, that my mother's Jamaican, my father from here. And she didn't get here until 1961, I want to say. But the majority of my family that came after 1970. And a bulk of my family came in the 80s when we had another change, laxing some of the stringency of being able to come here from predominantly Black countries, especially in the Caribbean and also in Africa. Matter of fact, you have a lot of immigration specifically from African countries that happened in the 1990s. So it's, and also, I don't know if you all know that California recently, Gavin Newsom signed a bill to create a task force to study reparations and implement that in that state. And they deemed that the people who would be able to get the reparations are folks who came from the who have been here multiple generations, you know, and also previously before that change in 1965, because more than likely they were already, their family has already been here and came through that institution. And they actually brought in to argue the point at least about 7 or 8 genealogists that were able to show different ways, records that we have on file and the like, to show that the task of proving lineage for African Americans of coming from that institution is not as Herculean as we think that they are, as we think it is. Yeah. So that's something that I wanted to bring up to the both of you. Okay, I will shut up now.
No, Cynthia, we greatly appreciate that. Honestly, you know that here we love to be corrected. We love to understand the nuance more. And it sounds like you, Blayton, and I are gonna have some classes if you want to teach, because you definitely have a lot of information on this and a lot of stuff that I was just incorrect on, and I was just in a place of ignorance, which, you know, is kind of why I started out the call by saying, look, there are a lot of people that have way better knowledge on this than me. And those are the people that we need to look to. Just real quick, I'll just kind of just a quick little question, and I'll give it to Blayton. We'll wrap up for the day. But do you, from your understanding of the California system that just recently got instituted, do you think that is something that is a good model for the nation as a whole, or are there still parts of it that are like, ah, this is kind of iffy?
Mm. Yeah, I do. And a reason being is because they're definitely doing it by empirical data in history. The task force has already, and I believe I have a copy of it, if you guys wanted, we can talk later, but they already produced over 500-page report based on not only just the institution of slavery and how it affected California, even though California specifically was not a slave state, it was still a state that held, that had slaves in it previous to the abolishment of slavery in 1863. So they not only have gathered information specifically on that institution, they also gathered information concerning lineage and also some of the other egregious happenings to Black folk after the institution of slavery, like Jim Crow, like you mentioned, blatant redlining, the mass industrial prison complex, and other lynchings, you know, land theft, even some of the issues that the Black farmers are dealing with right now, with, you know, the inequities that come with the way that seed is being sold to Black farmers versus white farmers and other communities. So and also even talking about the war on drugs. So yeah, there's the report is very robust, and it really could very much so serve as a model for a federal program. I know that like H.R. 40 is like the bill that's kind of been floating around Congress since 1989. It's not, and that particular bill is not necessarily the same way that California is operating right now. There are better acts of other reparation activists that they're putting together, that they're trying to get the sponsorship for Congress, but it would be in a way that we're studying the issue on a more holistic level using empirical data and then utilizing that to really talk about what reparations looks like that makes sense. And another thing I would encourage to read is Dr. Darity and A. Christian Mullins From Here to Equality, Reparations in the 21st Century. And they really break down not only the historical issues that African Americans from this particular group have actually witnessed and experienced in America, and also how a lot of these particular issues were federally pushed on our particular group, and also talks about what reparations could look like that makes more sense, especially when we're talking about closing the racial wealth gap, because the racial wealth gap right now between Black and white is like 90%. Like over 90 or 100 trillion is like held in the white group versus 3 to 4 trillion versus people who happen to be Black. So, you know, there's other ways that we can really talk about closing the racial wealth gap and other programs. It's not just the check. Right. But checks are very important so that we can really, you know, discuss actually doing it properly.
And for the record, I agree with everything you said. And I didn't say I don't think we should like we shouldn't get checks. That's not my standpoint. My standpoint is as long as we have a two-party system where the filibuster exists, we still have the electoral college, like all these things that are stemming from slavery. As long as we have a two-party system where those things are the reality, we're not going to get checks. So the starting point should be sustained.
I hear what you're saying. And I partly agree with that. The way that the system is set up right now, especially at the federal level, it makes it very difficult in order for that particular possibility to come through. However, it's not impossible because and I point to specifically what happened with the Japanese Americans back in 1988. Ronald Reagan signed into law the Civil Liberties Act, where people who were interned or their descendants, if the interned victims were not alive at that time period did get monetary compensation directly from the federal government. So even though, like, I get that there's a lot of barriers against us in order for this thing to happen, but it's not impossible. It really has to be more so a critical mass of people to push for these different things to actually come true so that we can actually make it happen.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for all of that. And it sounds like, I know I have more information than I need to learn on this. And hopefully all of the people watching and listening, are now excited to go out and do some more looking into this. We greatly, greatly appreciate that, Cynthia. And we can't wait till we see you again on another show here on the ACA. You know, we love you.
I love you, Backbone.
All right. Thank you so much, Cynthia. We always, always love hearing from her. She always has some wonderful stuff. Like point after freaking point. What a way to wrap up this first show for the year. But before we do entirely blatant, tell the wonderful folks where they can find you. Where are you?
I am under the name Blake. Blake is pretty much anywhere you can look. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, which I don't really interact with a lot. Even TikTok. I actually have a TikTok. So yeah, I'm pretty much everywhere, man. Just Google Blatant Blatheus, I'll pop up.
That's right. And one of the things that will pop up is those awesome appearances on the nonprofits, which, by the way, if you didn't know, it's the flagship show of the ACA. And it's actually going to be on right after this show at 3 p.m. Central Time, tiny.cc/YT. Super easy for you. We're going to get out of here, folks. But let me remind you, below this wonderful chat, there's a fundraiser. 100% of those proceeds go directly to the ACA, and YouTube does not take a cut. Remember, go ahead and smash that like button for us. It means the world to us, and it is so helpful for getting this out to other people and growing this community. And remember to subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Like, why haven't you done that? If you want to support even more, you can become a member. You just click the join button below the video, or you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/patreonth. You already know we have a wonderful channel that houses all the ACA shows in audio podcast form at tiny.cc/AEN podcast, and you should become a member of the Talk Heathen community in the Fan Run Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBTHG. Right after this show, we are going to take a quick call behind the scenes, but we are going to be trying to get over to the awesome ACD. That is the Fan Run Discord server at tiny.cc/ACA Discord. So we're going to try to be over there in about 10 minutes, y'all. So if you can, go ahead and hang out. Again, remember at 3 p.m., we've got the nonprofits, y'all, and y'all are going to love it. It is a great group this time, but we cannot go until we show that awesome crew. Where is that amazing crew? There they are. Look at those people. It's the cat that is actually running the whole show. We all know that. We all know. But can we get some love rings? Let's see if we can maybe get... Oh, yeah. Look at that. I feel the love. And we want everybody else out there to feel the love, because whether or not you are religious, whether or not you believe, if you are an essential worker, thank you. You have done so much, and we know you are still working, and we don't want to forget that. We don't want to let that go from our memory. It's been a hard time. It's probably still going to be difficult for a while, but we are trying, and we are making progress, and that's definitely because if you don't believe, if you're not religious, well, this is your space, and we have so many other spaces that you can come and hang out with and get to hear from all types of wonderful, wonderful people with all types of different thoughts, and just be together with a bunch of people that just really give a crap about you. And that's awesome, you know? However, if you do believe, we don't hate you.
We're just not convinced.
See you next time.
We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Friday at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTW and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTW.